advice of a colleague, I bought this new headset recording device to podcast to you that I'm wearing right now for the first time. It's really quite fancy. It's got big cushioned headphones and a microphone that juts right out to the side and all that. I sure do hope it's an improvement in sound quality. But even if it's not, it's really fun to wear because if I close my eyes, I might swear that I were flying a plane. So, good evening. It's the 8th of February, 2006. This is your captain speaking. It's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. Why I Transformed Myself into a Nightingale by Wolfgang Hildesheimer. Acting on the strength of my convictions, I transformed myself into a nightingale. Since neither the reason nor the resolve necessary for this sort of action lies within the realm of the ordinary, I think the story of this metamorphosis is worth telling. My father was a zoologist. Because he thought the literature on batrachia was incompetent and rather inaccurate, he spent his life writing a multi-volume study on the subject, which became famous in scholarly circles. This work never really appealed to me, although we had lots of frogs and salamanders at home, whose lives and patterns of development would have merited my study. My mother had been an actress before she married, and she achieved her great triumph as Ophelia at the Zwickau State Theatre. She never surpassed this high watermark. To this I owe my own name, Laertes, certainly a euphonious but somewhat peculiar name. Nevertheless, I am grateful that she didn't name me Polonius or Guildenstern. But, of course, it doesn't matter now. When I was 5 years old, my parents gave me a magic set. I learned how to make a certain amount of childish magic before I could even read or write. With the powder and instruments contained in the kit, I could turn colourless water red and back to colourless water again, halve a wooden egg simply by turning it upside down, while the other half disappeared, without a trace, and make a handkerchief change colours by pulling it through a ring. In short, there wasn't anything in the kit, as is the case with most toys, which represented reality in miniature. The manufacturer of this toy seemed intent on ignoring its educational value and suppressing the child's awakening sense of utility. This experience had a decided influence on my later development in that the joy of changing one useless object into another taught me to search for happiness in knowledge which serves no practical purpose. Certainly, I hadn't found this happiness before my metamorphosis. Above all, my ambition was aroused. Soon the magic kit no longer satisfied me, because in the meantime I had learned to read, and on the cover I read the demeaning phrase, "The Little Magician." I still remember the afternoon when I went into my father's study and asked him if I could have magic lessons. He was deep in the world of batrachia and looked at me absent-mindedly. I kept on asking. Soon he gave in. I can't escape the impression that he thought it had something to do with piano lessons, which I also took, because he asked me a few times afterward whether I could play Czerny Etudes yet. I said yes, because I was sure I would never have to prove it. I took lessons from a magician who appeared at several vaudeville shows in town, and who, I had heard, had been a great success in London and Paris. After a few years, I went to high school in the meantime. I had progressed far enough so that I could pull a rabbit out of a top hat. I remember the first performance I gave for my parents and close relatives. My parents were proud of my talents, which I had acquired on the side, so to speak. They thought I could practice them in the future instead of playing chamber music with friends while I worked at my career, something about which they had no really definite ideas. But I had other plans. I outgrew my teacher and began experimenting on my own. I didn't neglect my academic education, though. I read a lot and went around with school friends whose patterns of development I observed. One friend, who had been given an electric train in his childhood, was preparing for a career with the railroad. Another, who had played with tin soldiers, decided on a career as a military officer. In this way, the workforce was regulated by early influences, and each person latched on to his occupation, or rather, the occupation latched on to him. But I decided to arrange my life according to other considerations. I might mention here that I did not arrive at the decision I made during the next year because I wanted to appear eccentric or unique in the eyes of others. It was more my growing awareness that I couldn't select a conventional bourgeois profession without in some way interfering with other people's lives. The career of a bureaucrat seemed particularly immoral to me, but I rejected other, more accepted humanitarian careers as well. To me, the work of a doctor who could save human life through his interference was highly suspect, because it might be that the person he saved was an out-and-out scoundrel whose life hundreds of oppressed people fervently wished would end. When I came to this realization, I came to yet another, namely, that only the momentary state of things can be perceived, that it is merely idle speculation to try to draw conclusions or gather knowledge from experience. I decided to spend my life in leisure and contemplate nothing. I got two turtles, sat down on a lounge chair, and watched the birds above me and the turtles beneath me. I had given up magic because my art had reached a state of perfection. I felt that I was able to change people into animals. I didn't make use of this ability, though, because I believed that this sort of interference into another person's life was completely unjustifiable. It was at this time that my desire to become a bird first appeared. At first, I didn't want to admit this wish to myself, because it meant defeat to a certain extent. I hadn't yet succeeded in enjoying the pure existence of a bird without wishing for more beyond that. My feelings were tainted by desire. However, I was weak enough to toy with the idea of doing it, and indeed I was proud of being able to fulfill my wish when, and as soon as, it pleased me. I needed only a test of my art. The opportunity soon presented itself. One afternoon, while I was sitting in the garden observing my turtles, my friend, Mr. Verhan, visited me. He was a newspaper editor. Someone had given him a typewriter when he was young. He sat down on the lounge chair next to me and began to complain, first about malicious readers, then about incompetent journalists. I didn't say anything. People who are complaining usually don't appreciate interruptions. At last he finished, and said, "I've had it!" And as one of my turtles crawled under the lounge chair, he said, "Boy, I wish I were a turtle!" These were his last words, because I waved my magic wand and transformed him. Mr. Verhan's journalistic career was over, but his life was probably lengthened by this metamorphosis, because turtles live to be quite old. It was a great triumph for me. What's more, I now had three turtles. Just for the record, I'd like to assure you that I purchased the other two animals as such. I used my art one other time before my own metamorphosis. I remember this incident not without a twinge of uneasiness, because I am not completely certain that I handled things properly. One afternoon in June, I had spent the day in the country. I was sitting in the garden of an inn, under a linden tree, drinking a glass of apple cider. I was enjoying the solitude. But soon a group of 5 young girls came and sat down at a table near mine. The girls were gay and pretty, but I was irritated by the disturbance and became even more irritated when they began to sing, accompanied by one of them on the mandolin. First they sang, must I then be gone from the town? And next, oh, if I were a sparrow, and I had 2 wings, into your arms I'd fly. This song always seemed rather silly to me, because a bird naturally has 2 wings, doesn't it? But here was an express wish to be a bird, which prompted me, when the song was over, to transform the singers into a flock of sparrows. I went over to their table and waved my magic wand, so that for a moment it seemed as if I wanted to conduct the quintet. But not for long, because the 5 shrieking sparrows flew up and away. Only 5 half-empty glasses of cider, a couple of nibbled sandwiches, and the fallen mandolin testified that a few seconds before, full young lives were being lived. Surveying this desolate scene, I felt a slight sense of remorse come over me, because I thought that perhaps the singing of the song did not express absolutely and unequivocally the desire to be a bird. And besides, the phrase, "if I were a bird," doesn't necessarily express the desire to be a bird, even though that is the natural implication of the song, if you can speak of an implication in such a song. I had the feeling that I had acted emotionally under the influence of my certainly justified irritation. I thought that this wasn't worthy of me, so I decided not to delay my own metamorphosis any longer. I would like to make clear that it wasn't fear of the consequences of my deed, of any criminal prosecution, which finally persuaded me to take on another form. After all, I could easily have changed the police officers at the time of my arrest into tiny toy fox terriers. It was more certainly that, for technical reasons, I would never find the unspoiled peace I needed for the pure enjoyment of things, undisturbed by the will. Somewhere a dog would always bark, a child scream, or a young girl sing. My choice of the form of the nightingale was by no means arbitrary. I wanted to be a bird because the thought of being able to fly from one tree to another was very appealing. Furthermore, I wanted to sing because I love music. The thought that I would interfere in the life of something else, whose sleep I might disturb, did occur to me. But now that I am no longer human, I have put away my human thoughts and interests. My ethic now is the ethic of a nightingale. In September of last year, I went into my bedroom, opened the window wide, cast my spell, and flew away. I've had no regrets ever since. Now it is May. It is dusk, and soon it will be dark. Then I begin to sing, or, as humans say, strike up my song.